We did do this yesterday, but it's easy to forget sometimes, so we're going to review. The Jewish religion and the synagogues, they had become filled with apostasy, filled with idolatry even. And we've found two of the three ways that God would provoke Israel to believe. And we're going to go to the third way here, but I just want to review, just give you the names or our brief thing on the first and second ways they were provoked. There was a prophecy that shows God provoked apostate Israel to believe God by the signs that he showed them, as well as signs through other believers. Signs from God directly and signs through other believers. And we looked at Numbers 14:11 about that. How long will this people provoke me, and how long will it be ere they believe me for all the signs which I have showed among them? That's what the signs were invented. That's why God started using signs back in Exodus 4. Excuse me just a minute. Secondly, the second thing, there was a prophecy that prophesied to Israel about a work that God would do. And we see that in Habakkuk 1:5. Behold you among the heathen, and regard and wonder marvelously, for I will work a work in your days which you will not believe, though it be told you. And Paul tied that to his ministry in Acts 13:41. So we're ready now to see what the third prophecy was. Well, it was no surprise to Paul that the hierarchy of Israel and the majority of Israel had become apostate. By the time he got saved, he knew the principle, if not the verse, written in John. John 9:22, the Jews had already agreed that if any man did confess that he was Christ, he should be put out of the synagogue. Not he himself, but that Jesus was Christ, would be put out of the synagogue. And probably Paul, at that point, Saul of Tarsus, would have been one of the ones putting out the people that believed that Jesus was the Christ, putting the little flock out of the synagogues. Paul knew the prophecies in Ezekiel 8, 1 to 17. We've read that before. It's 17 or 18 verses, so we're not going to take time right now, but it's quite moving. If you have never realized the status of Israel, look at that. Ezekiel 8, 1 to 17. Paul would go on to write about the idols in the synagogue there in Thessalonica, 1 Thessalonians 1 verse 9, and in Corinth, 1 Corinthians 12 verse 2. And we can read those just a single verse each. In Thessalonica, 1 Thessalonians 1 9, for they themselves show of us what manner of entering in we had unto you, and how you turned to God from idols to serve the living and true God. And 1 Corinthians 12 2, you know that you were Gentiles, carried away unto these dumb idols, even as you were led. Both before and after Israel fell, they repeatedly provoked God. Israel itself was about to be provoked unto jealousy by God and through God's agents. And you can see Israel getting provoked by believers. And I've got, I should have probably put these in a package that you could just write it down. I'll see it on your screen, but if I put it in there, I think it. Well, let me try. I was thinking it would, the formatting of it would not be accepted by Pal Talk, but I'm going to try rather than read each one. Welcome to the room. It did show up. Okay, good. All those places, you can see Israel getting provoked at believers and by believers. Deuteronomy 32, verses 20 and 21. And he said, I will hide my face from them. I will see what their end shall be. For they are a very froward generation, children in whom is no faith. No faith. That was the problem. They have moved me to jealousy with that which is not God. They have provoked me to anger with their vanities, and I will move them to jealousy with those which are not a people. I will provoke them to anger with a foolish nation. God could have just said, I will move them to jealousy. I will provoke them to anger. But he said more. God had important, not to be ignored, information that he preserved for us in those verses. And so he had Moses write, I will provoke them to jealousy with those which are not a people. I will move them to jealousy with those which are not a people. I will provoke them to anger with a foolish nation. And if you compare the descriptions of God's agents there, that he talks about a foolish nation and those that are not a people, in Deuteronomy 32, verse 21, if you compare those with God's agents in Romans 10, 19, and in Romans 11, 11, well, let's just look at them. Romans 10, 19, but I say, did not Israel know? First Moses saith, I will provoke you to jealousy by them that are no people. And by a foolish nation, I will anger you. God said through Moses that he will provoke Israel to jealousy with those which are not a people. That was in Deuteronomy 32, 21. And by them that are no people, in Romans 10, 19. Well, that's the same group of people, not a people and no people. God said through Moses, I will provoke Israel to anger with a foolish nation. And by a foolish nation, I will anger you, he says in Romans 10, 19. So you can see, it's the same group of people told about in Deuteronomy 32, 21, as in Romans 10, 19, and also in Romans 11, 11, which reads, I say then, have they stumbled that they should fall? God forbid, but rather, through their fall, salvation is come unto the Gentiles, for to provoke them, Israel, to jealousy. Excuse me just a moment, please. So here we see again that God waited until Israel had fallen before he revealed the mystery of Christ through Paul. We see those two groups appear again here in Romans 11, 11, the two groups we've been talking about. There's the addition of a description of those which are not a people being called the Gentiles. Again, which Gentiles? That's those Gentiles that the same verse and other verses say were in a position to provoke Israel to jealousy. Through their fall, salvation is come unto the Gentiles for to provoke them to jealousy. Those Gentiles could only have been the Greeks in the Jewish synagogues, Sabbath after Sabbath. They came to bless God, bless Israel, bring their tithes to the synagogues. They believed that God was working in the world through Israel's covenants. But it wasn't yet all the Gentiles that salvation had come to. They hadn't heard it. They have to hear the gospel before they could believe it, and Paul was not yet sent to them. They could have incidentally heard it and believed it, but we don't know about that. So it says, unto the Gentiles, for to provoke them to jealousy. That's Romans 11:11. It was those of the non-Jews who were not a people. Israel was a people. Ephesus was a people. Egypt was a people. Syrophoenicia was a people. But the biblical Greeks were not a people. They were not a nationality. The Greeks were God-fearing seekers of wisdom and knowledge that had been influenced by the high value that the former Greek Empire placed on wisdom and knowledge. The Greeks were the intellectuals of the day, no matter what their nationality was. Mostly in the Bible, they were seekers of wisdom and knowledge of God. When they found the wisdom and knowledge of God in the synagogue scriptures, that's where they were kept, in the synagogues, they blessed Israel as they found that pleased God. And they found in the scriptures, Genesis 12:3, I will bless them that bless thee. That's God talking through Moses, talking to Abram at the time. And he was blessing, not only blessing Abram, but he says, those that help you, I'll bless them too. Those that are not Jews or not of your seed, outsiders, if they want to bless you for my sake, I will bless them. I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee, and in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. That's, in fact, in Galatians 3:8, that's called the gospel. You folks that think there's only one gospel in the whole Bible, that doesn't read the same as the gospel by which we're saved, does it? It's a different gospel. Good news, different good news. But that's what the Syrophoenician did, who is called, in the Bible, she was called a Greek. Mark 7:26. The woman was a Greek, a Syrophoenician by nation, and she besought him that he would cast forth the devil out of her daughter. That did not limit to whom Paul could go and preach the gospel of salvation, but it did limit to whom Christ sent Paul and charged him with the responsibility of preaching the gospel of God and the gospel of Christ. And those are named in the scriptures, different gospels that are named. After Christ surprisingly rescued Saul of Tarsus from the condition he was in as condemned and unforgivable, Paul had every right to say in parts of 2 Corinthians 9, verses 16 through 18, necessity is laid upon me. Yea, woe is unto me if I preach not the gospel. A dispensation of the gospel is committed unto me. I may make the gospel of Christ without charge. So that's, some of you were in the earlier meeting before this room opened, they were saying that Paul just went out on his own, he didn't have any authority. You can see in these verses, 2 Corinthians 9, 16 to 18, that God had committed it unto him to preach the gospel of Christ, the gospel of salvation. Let's consider the complex sending in Acts 26, verse 17. Now, this is in a context, and you can read the context. I'm going to keep it in the context. But starting in verse 17, delivering thee from the people and from the Gentiles, unto whom now I send thee. And in that verse, Acts 26:17, on the road to Damascus, at the time when Christ saved unforgivable Saul of Tarsus, he sent him to those same two groups from whom he would deliver him. From the people, that'd be the Jews, the apostate Jews, and from the Gentiles. The Gentiles that were involved in those areas where he went synagogue to synagogue. And that cannot mean all the Jews, and it cannot mean all the Gentiles. or that would that would mean that Paul needed to be delivered from everyone in the world, including his fellow laborers and including you and me. The context does not confirm that reading. There was a segment of the Jews from which Paul needed to be delivered, and there was a segment of the Gentiles from whom Paul needed to be delivered. Those are the same the people and the same the Gentiles that we identified earlier in Deuteronomy 32, verse 21, and in Romans 10, 19, and Romans 11, 11. They're the same the people and the same the the Gentiles that are in a position to provoke Israel to jealousy and anger, according to Romans 10, 19. They're the same people and the same Gentiles from which Paul will need to be delivered. Those are the ones Christ sent Paul to preach the name of Jesus and the identity of Jesus that Paul was separated unto in Romans 1:1, the very first verse of Romans. Paul, a servant of Jesus Christ, called to be an apostle, separated unto the gospel of God. That was his starting point. That's what turned him around, made him he had been unsavable in Israel's doctrine, the only way to be saved at the time, until God saved Paul as a sinner, as the first of sinners, the chief of sinners. Well then, how did we get our gospel of the grace of God preached to us? We're not in the synagogues to bless Israel before Israel was cast away in Acts 28:28 says, "Be it known, therefore, unto you, that the salvation of God is sent unto the Gentiles, and that they will hear it." That's a connector verse there, isn't it? The gospel of salvation being preached throughout since Acts 9, when Paul was saved, was the same one that was sent to the Gentiles after Acts 28. What was the route on which God sent our gospel to get it all to us as not just the Greeks anymore, but to all Gentiles, all people? The preceding events and scriptures lead us to the point of answering that question, and Philippians 4:15 answers the question of how all the Gentiles got the gospel of the grace of God by telling us the beginning of the gospel was when Paul departed from Macedonia. It pins it down. And here's the reading of the verse. Now you Philippians know also that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no church communicated with me as concerning giving and receiving, but you only. Well, there's still a loose end there. Look at Acts 16:12, and it tells us that Philippi was the chief city of that part of Macedonia. And so when you get to Acts 20, verse 6, it tells us that Paul departed from Macedonia when he sailed away from Philippi, Macedonia, being sent far hence unto the Gentiles, Acts 22:21, to dispense to testify the gospel of the grace of God, Acts 20:24. And let me just read those verses. The only authority we have is what God says in the Bible. So if we ignore the scriptures, we're just talking opinions. Let me read these verses. That's where the authority lies. Acts 16:12, "And from thence to Philippi, which is the chief city of that part of Macedonia and a colony. And we were in that city abiding certain days." So Philippi is the chief city of Macedonia, no small place. And those people that met by the riverside to worship God, they, no doubt, there was a synagogue. It's reported that they probably didn't have a synagogue there, so they met by the... No, they were like the people in John 16:2. People thought they were doing God a favor to kill the ones that believed that Jesus was the Christ. They and John 9:22, they were removed from the synagogue because they believed in Jesus. That's my understanding of it. Acts chapter 20, verses 6 and 24. And we sailed away from Philippi. Remember, that's in Macedonia, leaving Macedonia. That's when the beginning of the gospel was. But well, let me just read it. And we sailed away from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread, and came unto them to Troas in 5 days, where we abode 7 days. But none of these things move me, neither count I my life dear unto myself, so that I might finish my course with joy, and the ministry which I have received of the Lord to testify the gospel of the grace of God. No scripture tells us that God replaced that Macedonian sending from Philippi, which followed Paul's temple vision. That was years after Christ sent Paul, when Christ sent Paul to the Jew first and also to the Greek, who were in a position to provoke Israel to jealousy and save some. Later, during the dispensation of the grace of God, Paul wrote to those in Philippi who had been saved by the gospel of Christ when he wasn't yet sent to all people. In Philippians 1:27, he writes to these those in Philippi during his dispensing of the gospel, they were saved, and before he was sent to all men in Acts 20, verse 6. And then Paul wrote, well, you find in there, he calls it the gospel of Christ. And that's the only time he mentions the gospel of Christ after the end of Acts. He mentions it all through Acts. There's 11 times, I think it is, he mentions the gospel of Christ. But that was the gospel being dispensed to the Jews and the Greeks in the synagogues that were in a position to provoke Israel, apostate Israel, to provoke them to jealousy and save some. But after he wrote to Philippi, he wrote to Timothy and to Titus about Jerusalem relief that started in the Acts period dispensation of the gospel. And I've got a list of verses where that went on too, starting with Acts 11, verses 27 to 30. But then Paul wrote more post-Acts epistles of Colossians and Philemon. And lastly, Paul wrote two final epistles. He wrote to the Ephesians that he had not known about before, not the same people that were in the synagogue in Ephesus, people that came to know the gospel by other means, people that had traveled there, probably from that meeting in Acts 20, verse 17 to the end of the chapter there. They went back to Ephesus and spread the word that Paul was sent to all people now. But he wrote to the Ephesians, and he wrote the second epistle to Timothy, which completed our Bible. That's where we get our gospel. It was sent to all people after it was sent to the prophesied Jews and Greeks, or those that are not a people, and those that were a foolish nation. Chronologically, today's gospel of salvation dispensed to us by God is the latest gospel given in the Bible. It's the one that still applies to us. That's how we can receive that promise of salvation, by believing that Christ took care of all our sins. They're not. There's no chance of a believer dying in sin. All the sins are already judged, sentenced, and executed on the cross. Well, that's the end of the lesson. Are there questions?